Some of you probably know it, and it's nice to hear it again. So the Chinese farmer story goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a Chinese farmer, and he had a horse. And the local villagers said to the Chinese farmer, "Oh, what great fortune, you have a horse. We have to plow our fields just by hand, and you have a horse, you can plow your fields with the help of the horse." The Chinese farmer was a Taoist. And he said, "Good fortune, ill fortune, who can say?" Some time passed, the horse ran away. And the villagers came to the farmer and said, "Oh, what ill fortune, your horse ran away. Now you have to plow your fields like us." And the Chinese farmer said, "Good fortune, ill fortune, who can say?" That's a drishti, perception message. Some time passed, the horse came back. And not only the horse came back with some other wild horses, a whole bunch of horses. And the farmers, the villagers came to the farmer and said, "Wow, what good fortune. Now you have many horses. You can easily plow your fields." And the farmer said, "Good fortune, ill fortune, who can say?" He was true to his Taoist ideology. Some time passed. The son of the farmer was trying to train the wild horses how to plow the field, and he fell off the horse and broke his leg. So the villagers came to the farmer and said, "Oh, what ill fortune. Your son broke his leg." And he said the standard line, "Good fortune, ill fortune, who can say?" And then the Chinese government went to war. And when they went to war, there was a law passed. All able-bodied men between this age, that age, have to join the army. Conscription, it's called. So when the government person came, his son was spared because he had a broken leg. And the villagers came to the farmer and said, "Oh, what good fortune. Your son didn't have to go to the war." And the farmer said, "Good fortune, ill fortune, who can say?" And that's the end of the story. It's not the end of the farmer and his son, but it's the end of the illustration. So how we perceive things, drishti, especially when there are circumstances that life brings our way and we weren't anticipating the uncertainties, and sure enough, uncertain things do happen. And how do we respond to them? So if you're a Taoist, that's how you respond. And if you're a transcendentalist, you're very interested in distinguishing reality from illusion. This phrase, reality distinguished from illusion, comes straight from Srila Prabhupada's writings. Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text Number 2. It's having to do with the absolute truth. Satyam Param. Satyam means truth, and Param means the highest truth, or the absolute truth. Satyam Param Dhimahi. A transcendentalist is interested in understanding reality and having perceptions based upon reality, not based upon illusion. So that's a little more than the mind. It goes now to the intelligence and also the soul, the soul's orientation towards the source of everything. And bring the attention to the source of everything. When something comes your way, you have a GPS system that can tell you how to navigate your way towards the source of everything, even in uncertain circumstances. Now I'm going to go back down a little bit to one of the reference materials I appreciate very much, and so I refer to it quite often. There's an image of an elderly version of Viktor Frankl, who wrote a book in 1946 called Man's Search for Meaning. Some can show of hands who is familiar with this book, Man's Search for Meaning. Okay, a few. He, by profession, when he wrote this book, he was a practicing, I think, psychiatrist or psychologist, one or the other. And he was a Jewish man who had been in a Nazi concentration camp and survived. And the book, 1946, was written after he was out of the concentration camp for some number. Actually, he was in three different ones. They shifted him to three different places. So it was very intimidating or horrible circumstance. And, you know, he didn't so much go into the horrors of life in a concentration camp. He was more speaking about how to deal with circumstances that life places in front of you. And using our language here, it requires resiliency. You know, the rubber band has to stretch a bit just to keep things together. And then his intention while there, and what he says, protected him, his mind and the Supreme Person protected him, because he had a very clear idea of what he wanted to learn from this experience, so on the other side of the experience he could help people that are undergoing stress and difficult circumstances that are outside of their control, the circumstances outside of their control, and how to stay even-minded through those difficulties, how to stay balanced and resilient, and recover quickly and as far as possible as circumstances permit. So here's just a couple of quotes. You can go online and find some others there, or buy the book. It's a skinny little book. It's easy to read too. Here's one. Everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. That's a freedom, and that's a drishti component. The srishti component is, there may be circumstances you have nothing to do with. It's just thrust upon you. When you're in a concentration camp, you can moan and complain or whatever else, but it doesn't change the circumstance. Some in life, there are some circumstances that just don't change. When that hurricane came, it's not like, hey, wait a minute, I'm a nice devotee, please go away. There are circumstances of life that are what they are. And then how are you going to respond to them? So that's a freedom. And there's strength in freedom. One of the things that circumstances, especially cruel circumstances, have is they want to take away your sense of, defeat you, your sense of empowerment, and disempower you and just break you. But so this is the, to bend or to break, resiliency or not. So this is his thought. There's a strength in recognizing you have a freedom to choose. This is this drishti factor. Here's another quote I like. There is also purpose in life, which is almost barren of creation and enjoyment, and which admits but one possibility of high moral behavior, namely in man's attitude to his existence, an existence restricted by external forces. The external forces, that's the Trishti component. But that doesn't determine drishti. We have freedom. to choose your attitude towards existence, the good and the bad and the mix and the good fortune, ill fortune, just like the Chinese farmer. Or just like us in the face of whatever it is, the pandemic or what it means with your all kinds of things, without going into the inventory list of things that get impacted by just that one thing. Family, career, seclusion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Nice idea, and it's true. So what about if you don't feel you have the strength of your own convictions, or the strength that you have that freedom to choose or culture an attitude towards your existence that's based upon you, that you don't have a choice in the circumstances placed upon you? Here's a nice image that says what I'm trying to say. Physical strength is measured by what we carry. Inner strength is measured by what we can bear. Different cultures have different notions about this. But the spiritual culture, or the specifically even the bhakti culture, is this inner strength is bala. Here we go with another Sanskrit term. It's not a difficult one. Here's a direct quote from Krishna book. One cannot attain the supreme platform of self-realization without being sufficiently favored by Balaram. Bala does not mean physical strength of the two options, that which you can carry. One must have the spiritual strength, which is infused by Balaram or Sankarshan. Spiritual strength will help you to live by your convictions and feel confident, even when it's intense, that you have your convictions, the values that you wish to live by. So let's go up here, the iceberg example. Here's the tip of the iceberg, and that's behaviors and measurable things. But just below the surface of the water is your values, things that you hold. This is what I want to live by. And then there's something that's deeper than that, that which gives strength to your values. It's the who you are principle. And then there are your values. Because values can change and behaviors can change, but who you are doesn't change. The deep, deep sense of who you really are. The deepest held convictions that are unchanging. We need spiritual strength to align everything according to those deepest held convictions. That's Balaram. And when that happens, I put purposely in big letters, white letters, the supreme platform of self-realization. So now we're in the spiritual realm, not just the mind and senses. In that spiritual realm, it's the supreme platform of self-realization is, in really simple language, it's to know who you are, distinguished from who you aren't. And we're often living in the world of, I know who I am, but I'm living as if I'm something else. I mean, that's just an honest reality. We accept that we're spirit souls, that's no problem. And we don't always live our lives accordingly. But when you live your life accordingly, that's this supreme platform of self-realization. Or here's a Bhagavad Gita verse, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. That's Brahma-Bhuta. Chapter 18, towards the end of the entire chapter. Brahma-Bhuta I'm just going to spend a little bit of time on this verse. We're going into Bhagavad Gita now. Brahmabhuta means to know who you are. I am the part and parcel of the Supreme, just like this sun is again shining in my eye. So I'm very aware of the sun through the agency of the sunshine. Just as the sunshine is part and parcel of the sun, so I, the living entity, am part and parcel of the Supreme Living Entity. And the Supreme Living Entity is fully independent, fully conscious, and fully blissful, and eternally existing. And so am I, you know, in a tiny spark. So that's a concept. But when one has realized not just the concept, but one has realized that identity, the spiritual platform of self-realization, supreme spiritual platform of self-realization, that's Brahmabhuta. And a symptom, how do you know who's in this Brahmabhuta platform? Prasanatma. There's a prasanna means happiness, spiritual happiness within, at the soul level, prasanatma. What else? What are some other symptoms? One who has that happiness within? Na sochati, na kangsati. That's this simplicity principle. Hankering and lamenting on the material platform, they subside and then they're gone. Na sochati, na kangsati. And then there's others out there, including, you know, the Nazi concentration camp people. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu. Doesn't mean you embrace them, but you'll see the spirit soul rather than just the covering and the behaviors. It's the bottom part of the iceberg. You can see other living entities accordingly. That's a symptom of the Brahmabhuta stage. And madhabhaktim labhate param. Labha means to attain or obtain. One comes to the stage of bhakti. So that's pretty nice. We need some spiritual strength to get there, because that's a nice notion. We're not there yet. So we need the bala, the Balarama is prepared to give. And here's some really good news. We have the access to Bala Rama directly in the Maha Mantra. This second Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare can be understood to refer to Balarama. In fact, right in the Bhagavatam, in Krishna's pastimes, Rama, when the name Rama is used, it's calling Balaram. And we're calling Balaram. If we're conscious, or as we become more conscious, we become conscious of calling to Balaram for strength to carry us to the fulfillment of our deepest convictions, that is, to be in Krishna's service, in his shelter, in this spiritual platform, supreme spiritual platform of self-realization. That's a very simple, direct, and everyday access to spiritual strength. And with that spiritual strength, then we can experience strength beyond our own strength. We'll go back to this. There's physical strength and there's spiritual strength. And spiritual strength is something that's within the soul, but if you have Balaram's direct support of your strength, then you have spiritual strength. And that spiritual strength you can also get from the association of those who have that spiritual strength, from Sadhu Sangha. That's what we're doing this morning and during the day today. Just gathering some spiritual strength through sadhu sangha that will help you reached this supreme spiritual platform of self-realization, this Brahma-Bhuta, Prasanatma, Nasochati, Nakamsati. I chose this image just like a little child holding the hand of their father. The little child feels protected in the presence of their father. There's security and safety in the hands of a loving father. And Krishna is that loving father, Krishna Balaram, where are prepared to give us everything, not just protection, but everything. Strength, intelligence, loving reciprocation, everything. All needs are supplied. So strength beyond our own strength. The last message is this one, Dhira. Can't see the image so well because of the sun over there. But the word Dhira is very much connected with the term resiliency. Dhira means undisturbed. And even when there's cause for disturbance, one who remains undisturbed is Dhira. I'll say it again. Even when there's cause for disturbance, it's not so wonderful if there's no cause for disturbance and you're not disturbed. But when there's cause for disturbance, what to speak of something extreme, and you remain undisturbed, that's Dhira. So the stage of Dhira is a symptom, it's a quality or a trait of one who has spiritually matured. One who hasn't spiritually matured may remain calm up to a certain threshold and then they lose it. There's a breaking point for nearly everyone. And Dhira is one who remains undisturbed, even in the most difficult of circumstances. Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, most greatest of dangers, one may remain undisturbed, but that requires spiritual connection. And that's what the teaching of Krishna consciousness, the teaching of Bhagavad Gita and its further study in Srimad Bhagavatam provides us, like a very nice map, how to get to that platform. So we're not there yet, so we may go back and consider some of the earlier points that were made just on the platform of the mind, on the simple level, accepting of austerities, being a little flexible, if not elastic, when unexpected circumstances arise. I'm doing a little review now. The phrase is go with the flow. That's Taoism. Who knows? And wait a while and the circumstance change, and wait a while the circumstance changes. So don't get so invested in the temporary circumstance. Have a longer picture of where you're going. Where is this human life meant to take us? And then make a spiritual connection. That's the yoga principle, spiritual connection. And specifically, the bhakti yoga principle gives us the direct assistance of Balaram, Krishna and Balaram in the Maha Mantra. And if followed carefully, nicely, then the fullness of full resiliency is there. Regardless of the extremes of the circumstance, we can remain very balanced and contented and peaceful. That's available. Progressively becomes available to one who follows the bhakti path. So let's see if there's some discussion. I think what I'm going to do is take this microphone off the microphone stand and stand up. so I can see you better.
Stand up.
Go ahead.
When you're talking about Bala, and you gave the example of an iceberg, that the tip of the iceberg is a behavior. The surface, it's a values.
No, below the surface.
Okay, below the surface.
Below the surface of the water.
Okay, below the
values.
And something that is deep beyond that, what is that?
That's your deepest held, unchanging realities and certainties of life.
Sure. So based on that unchanging realities of life, one modifies or one adjusts his environment. And based on that environment, he creates his own values. And based on those values, he creates those behavior.
Yes, one affects the other is what you're saying.
Sure.
Yes.
But correct. How does this is equally applicable to the people who are living a material life?
Oh yeah.
So
it's a principle.
Yeah. So so if the person is a good moral character, if a good behavior, that doesn't imply that he is more near to the bhakti process, whereas other whose character or his values are not so properly conducted, he could be more near to the bhakti, because bhakti is independent to all these things.
Could you say it slower? He could be more what?
He could be more near to the bhakti process. He could be more devotional, because bhakti is independent to all these things.
Okay, so what's your point?
Is it true or wrong?
Do you have another question after this question? Because I want to... That's it. Okay. Yes, it's possible. Supposing, taking your example, supposing someone has grown up in a difficult situation and they're jumbled up, but deep inside they have faith in God. And then over there is somebody that's a moralist that doesn't have the same faith in God. So the former person has at least potential, special potential, to connect with good association and become elevated beyond the behaviors and values that are a little, you know, out of alignment. Yes. Okay. I'm used to the follow-up question after the first. Go ahead. And anyone else would like to, or particularly our guests here?
Guru Maharaj, couple questions. You were speaking about Viktor Frankl and how he had an intention that when he got on the other side of the difficulty, he wanted to help others.
Yes.
So it seems it is important for us to have a sankalpa.
Yes, have a mission in life.
As we are passing through a reversal.
Yes, you got it.
And yet, it might not be very clear to us, you know, what we are meant to learn from this as we're going through it. So is our intention, you know, often generic in the sense, I want to learn whatever Krishna wants me to learn at the end of this? But does it help to have a more specific sankalpa?
It helps, but if you don't, then the inquisitive mind is more likely to discover than one that's not inquisitive. Or in the biblical language, seek and ye shall find. So the inquisitive spirit is where you may be in that space. I don't know, I'd like to know. And yes, if you have a clear, that helps. And as you go along, your idea, that was it, be open to have it refined and even, you know, adjust it to something else. Because you know, more light may come in, and then you'll understand better tomorrow than today. Be open for that. That relationships are dynamic, and certainly relationship with Krishna is very dynamic. You've had a second question?
Guru Maharaj, towards the end of the class, you were mentioning that we shouldn't get so invested in the circumstances. So what is the art of being very diligent, very careful in our service, and yet not getting invested, because we have that tendency to...
Well, it's to say don't be overly invested in the circumstances doesn't mean, you know, become dull or turn your intelligence into the off position. It doesn't mean that. It means don't be so invested in the temporary that you forget the purpose of your engaging in the temporary. The purpose is purification and service to Krishna. And so don't lose that picture. Too much investment in the temporary will lead to forgetfulness of higher principle, or back to this example, the bottom of the iceberg. You know, I just get so invested in the temporary, I lose it. Like, you know, it's common. Well, without giving examples, it's very common. It's how we live our lives. We have faith, and we get really busy, and even supposing it's not a difficult thing, it's just a busy thing, we forget. We get involved in the temporary so much, we just forget life's mission. And even maybe, you know, a shorter term, this nature that I have, and I'm trying to pursue a development of this nature that I have, and you just get caught up in the temporary. So, longer and ultimate purposes. Ultimate purpose meaning shelter in transcendence, shelter in our eternal relationship with the Supreme. So, doesn't mean check out on the temporary, just don't be overly invested.
On the slide of where you pointed out physical strength versus inner strength, it says inner strength is the ability to bear. Yes. So is there certain things that saintly people or that they will not bear? Or
that say the last part, saintly people do what?
Are there certain things that saintly persons who have great inner strength will still not bear or not be tolerant to?
Do you have something in mind?
I was thinking about the concept of injustice and fairness, for example. When I see, my mind is going to Prahlad Maharaj at the moment. As a young boy, he bore the torture of his father. But at the same time, he says to Lord Narasimha Dev, I cannot bear or tolerate the suffering of others, and I'm not going to find my own salvation without helping others, for example.
Well, My, as you were speaking, I was thinking of Judd Bharat and his conversation with Rahugana. And there's this question when Judd Bharat was dealt with, so his life was threatened he was going to be a human sacrifice by Kali worshippers. He said nothing but to speak of injustice. And, you know, so why he chose, he was saved. You know, in case people are not familiar with the story, goddess Kali jumped out of the deity and chopped the people to pieces. You know, this is the Lord's devotee. You can't do this. So he was protected. But why did he choose to speak to Rahugana? And it's not easy to understand. But it's something that's described in the verse and the commentary on the verse is the harsh words of Rahugana were unbearable. That, you know, inner strength is measured by what we can bear. It was unbearable. Now he's on a platform like Prahlad Maharaj, and it was unbearable. But what came out was speaking transcendence. No, in part of speaking transcendence, he essentially called the king a fool. But, you know, Prahlad said the same to his father and to his teachers. So, but we don't get an indication that Prahlad didn't speak to everybody. He spoke, you know, appropriate to the audience, to different groups of people. And Jed Bharat chose not to. So my answer to your question is different persons are different, what they will bear and what they'll choose to not bear. And when they choose to not bear, there's a purpose behind it. A service to others purpose behind it, not just lose it and get angry or something. So they can bear, but their behavior, you know, the tip of the iceberg part, the measurable part, is going to be different depending upon the heart and their relationship with the Supreme Lord on this, you know, perfected platform. And then there's the rest of us that aren't on that platform. Okay. You have something online? Anything in the room? Any of our guests? Okay. Online, go ahead.
This is a question from Aditya. Aditya, you can unmute and ask your question.
Am I audible? Hare Krishna, am I audible?
I think you better just read it.
Yeah, I think we got some audio feedback going on. So his question is, what are immediate ways to help ourselves in times when we panic?
In times when we panic?
And when we have not yet realized Brahma-Bhuta state. When we appreciate the concept, but we don't have realization.
Well, take 10 deep breaths when you panic. You know, do your pranayama. You calm the mind down, because that helps the physiological, neurological system of the body. And seek good association when you panic. You know, hold the hand of somebody that's not gonna, you know, smash you in the head, but they'll help you calm. And you know, see this, the reality, rather than the perception that you're experiencing. And so, panicking, you know, that's a strong word. It's not just like feeling intense emotion. It's panic. So, it's a good opportunity to take profound shelter of the holy name. Yeah. In response, I'm thinking of a situation that quietly I've been dealing with over the past 2 weeks, where a devotee was in a state of panic. And he's getting professional help because there's it became really extreme, like real extreme. So one may need professional help, but what happened before that was there was sadhu sangha. There was a number of devotees reaching out to this panic feeling individual, so they felt person's care. So as a community, or as an individual that's part of a community, recognizing when you see someone is approaching that stage, in whatever capacity and relationship you have, reach out to them. Because they may not even be able to acknowledge in that panic state, but they won't forget. There's a place of shelter and safety in the sangha of those who are caring and capable individuals. So that's not a message to the panic person, it's a message to those that see someone's heading in that direction. So those are some thoughts. And I suggest that you have a little offline discussion with Jumuna Jivana, because he's getting some training in this area. Go ahead.
This is from Amara. You kindly mentioned that one who is favored by Lord Balaram has a strength to go through turbulence with faith. Is there a qualification for this favor, or is it his sweet will?
It's our eagerness for it. That's the qualification. He's ready. You don't need other qualification. Just reach out. That's it. Okay. Thank you all. Oh.
Guru Maharaj, I was thinking something in connection with what Sri Radhika Mataji asked about the temporary, not investing in temporary nature. So something that came to, I've been thinking about was, we learned that living entities, eternal nature is to serve. Now the service, some services that I'm engaged in, it is just my conditioned nature that I'm engaging in service. So it feels like it's just, I don't know how to ask the question, but I've been having this heaviness in my heart that this is the conditioned nature I'm just giving to Krishna. It's not really service. In one or two services that I'm...
It can be all kinds of additional things going on in addition to what you said. You know, self-deception, other things. Like, you know, there's a hollowness inside. I'm not you, just people. There's a hollowness inside, and I really don't want to touch that hollowness inside feeling, so I just keep myself really busy doing things. Feeling good about myself because I don't want to touch that hollowness that's inside. And, you know, just keep stay real busy doing things. And it really isn't, you know, my relationship with Krishna, reaching out to him. And so there's many things that could be going on. Just back, circling back to your specific question, it's a stage of bhakti. Krishna knows, and Krishna is accepting, and you know he directly or indirectly, that means circumstances or people or his devotees or etc. combination, they create situations that shift everything, either slowly or suddenly, and then you have to look at yourself. So it's good to look at yourself as you're going along, and then go to that core, the bottom of the iceberg place. That's, what do I really want? And then you make some strategy. It's a doable, sustainable strategy to get to what you want. And try to stay aligned with that, because we're out of alignment. It's, you know, our conditioned nature is we're out of alignment, without detailing the so many ways we can be out of alignment. The bhakti principle, it will is the driving force that will help the alignment become successful. Introspection and association with others that know us and can see us in a way that we can't see ourselves, that kind of association is extremely valuable. Sadhu Sangha, with persons that are wise and are our dear most friends. So those kinds of associations are really helpful to get us in the alignment position, you know, and in prayers to Balaram. Strength, please. Okay. You have something.
I have a question, and there's some online as well. So my question is, I was watching Falling Srila Prabhupada, and he was in Mauritius speaking about the Bhagavad Gita. And one person in the audience was pretty adamant and asking the question in a forceful way, why did Arjuna, after hearing Bhagavad Gita, act, you know, in a materialistic way when his son died, Abhimanyu? And that's not befitting someone who's a dhira. You use the word dhira. And Prabhupada, the way he responded, you know, so the man was obviously in this judgmental state of Arjuna. Prabhupada almost chastised him, said it's actually very natural for a father who's lost his son to feel that way. And then, you know, but what was the result? Arjuna did not leave the battlefield. He continued his service. And I was thinking about Srivas Pandit. And he lost his son. And for him it was, let's just continue the kirtan with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there are differences in how devotees respond to, perfected devotees respond to.
Yes. It connects with what Nityananda Pran was asking. Not the same, but it connected.
So I guess one comment is that one needs to be careful to judge whether it's a dhira or not. But the real test is whether one continues on with their service towards the mission of life. Is that accurate?
Well, a little qualifier. You know, connecting to her question. They could just do it because they're stoic. They just like hard to steal. There's other qualifiers. Their shelter in Krishna has not shifted. And that's a measure of that is service, but
there's a question from Shiva Kumar P. What do we learn from the Chinese farmer story?
Don't react. We're not Taoists, but don't be overly invested in the circumstance, which is one of the Sri Radhika's questions. I mean, it's suitable for a Taoist. It's a good story for a Taoist. And so how do we take it? Don't overly react to circumstances, because circumstances change. So for us, stay fixed in the higher principles and the higher purpose of life, and don't overly react to temporary. And that's a drishti disposition. That's why I connected it with what Viktor Frankl said. It's your attitude towards your existence. What's important? Is the temporary important, or is the long-term trajectory of your life to reach life's ultimate goal what your life is about? That's a decision each of us create or involve ourselves with. So as a Vaishnav, don't be overly invested in the temporary.
From PNVV Satyanarayan, when we have an avalanche-like difficult situation...
We have a what kind?
Avalanche.
Avalanche. Allergy?
Avalanche.
Avalanche. Okay, avalanche. Okay.
We can bend as much as required to confront the situation. But when it is not expected, how do we do it? How do we do it in that situation without breaking? This is Sumantra Das from Rajamundry, India.
Yeah. It depends on you, your capacity and the circumstance and the resources that you have available, and how to, it depends. So it depends. I think this will be the last question, because I'd like to end the class.
This is from Sanchari. Thinking about the Taoist farmer, it seems to be steady in our determination. We need to normalize our ability to feel all types of emotions. Mm. But just not become fixed in any particular one, whether good or bad. Is this the correct understanding?
Yeah. Yes. Well done. Thank you all very much. Have a nice day with the activities that are planned, and who's going to talk about the activities that are planned? Acharyanishtha, or you, or... Oh, Acharyanishtha, if you can hear, please come. He may be down in the kitchen taking care of what's next.
You know, I can give a little summary of what we're going to be doing. Hare Krishna, everyone. Welcome again. Thank you for joining us during this strange upside-down times of the world. After the morning class, which is now, we're going to have breakfast downstairs. We might need a couple of volunteers to help serve out and clean up right after the breakfast. There's going to be a service hour to do some service together. It might be some temple-related project. I'm not aware of that, but Acharya will inform us. And then at 11 o'clock, we'll come back here in this room. So about a couple hours from now. And we'll meet to have a discussion and integration exercises about living life in the realm of reversals or challenges. That'll go on till about 12:30. And then there's a little break, or it's a little flexible schedule until 1 p.m. 1 p.m. we'll have lunch. And then 2 p.m. we'll be headed to the beach for a little kirtan together, a lake meditation. And then we'll be back at 5. At 5:30 p.m., we'll have another talk by Romapad Swami, who's going to speak on dealing with anxiety, specifically the aspect of anxiety. So we look forward to that. And then there'll be a question-answer session followed by dinner. And that'll conclude our retreat for today. Thank you all very much. Did you want to add something?
Okay. Please make sure to stay socially distant and please wear your masks when you're not speaking in the microphone. And we'll see you at breakfast. Hare Krishna.